Welcome to this week's show. We've got a completely mad show for
Absolutely.
You because it's been a completely mad weekend. We've got a really big report from Evian with hopefully a phone interview with people who are still there. We've got
a lot of world news from Indonesia, something on the BETC pipeline on Burma, Australia, Iraq, things from Russia. We've got a couple of people in the studio who are going to be talking about a party they're organising, and a really, really funny guy in a silly hat.
Thank
but that
you.
Works
yeah.
really well yeah. on radio.
And loads of other stuff.
Yeah, so time for a track. We've got Laura from Positive World.
Hello.
Who's got some fascinating news to tell us about
Party. Ooh, that's a good lead-in. Hi. Basically, Party, 9th of June at the Pool, which is in Curtin Road, very near Old Street Tube. fantastic lineup we've got. We've got John Higley, Simon Munnery, Hills Barker, Vic Lambrusco, all sorts of amazing and well-renowned
poets and comics. Isn't just your birthday?
No, there is a sort of ulterior motive, actually. It's for Care International and their relief work that they're doing in Iraq at the moment, so it's all good causes as well. Start at 8, and please, come one, come all, and bring 50 of your closest friends. We'd appreciate it. And, yeah, that's the way it goes, really. It's fabulous. The poem is Mightier Than the Bomb.
And speaking of poems, you have one.
Oh, yes, speaking of poems, good thing you mentioned that, I do. Now, everyone maintain interest because it has got four verses, so it's a good thing for concentration, but it is a beautiful poem. So, here we go. Five ways to kill a man. There are many cumbersome ways to kill a man. You can make him carry a plank of wood to the top of a hill and nail him to it. To do this properly, you require a crowd of people wearing sandals, a cot that crows, a cloak to dissect, a sponge, some vinegar, and one man to hammer the nails home. Or, alternatively, you can take a length of steel, shaped and chased in a traditional way, and attempt to pierce the metal cage he wears. But for this you need white horses, English trees, men with bows and arrows, at least two flags, a prince, and a castle to hold your banquet in. Dispensing with nobility, you may, if the wind allows, blow gas at him. But then you need a mile of mud, sliced through with ditches, not to mention black boots, bomb craters, more mud, a plague of rats, a dozen songs, and some round hats made of steel. In the age of aeroplanes, you may fly miles above your victims and dispose of him by pressing one small switch. All you then require is an ocean to separate you, two systems of government, a nation scientist, several factories, a psychopath, and a land that no one needs for several years. These are, as I began, cumbersome ways to kill a man. Simpler, direct, and much more neat is to see that he lives somewhere in the middle of the 20th century and leave him there.
And leave him there.
And leave that there.
Indeed, because now we have a funny man.
Well, funny weird.
And he's a weird man in the studio. Funny weird man.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes, Cyber Saxon. He's at our party, so it's all a preempter.
Yes, I would appreciate if I've only just met the people in the studio now, so if any time you want to chip in with any questions, you can.
Mm.
Just to keep things
all
rolling.
Right.
But yeah, I've just been thinking a lot about life, really, recently.
Yeah.
I think it's something about London that makes you, it can often be a lonely existence, and I've been thinking about the path that your life takes, and I've been thinking, like most of the viewers out there today, I was once, a long time ago, back in the deepest, darkest depths of my past, I was born. I can only assume I was, but because I mean, obviously I can't remember anything about it, but some people are born with a silver spoon in their mouth, other people are born with a massive wooden fork, which is fashioned from a tree built from the very seed of Satan, which is prodded repeatedly into the back of their head. I myself was born slightly different in that respect, in the fact that I was actually, and I know it might be hard to believe, I was actually born immortal.
Handy.
Handy, you might think. It's actually quite weird, because it's not like, you know, if you imagine it, you might imagine that when you're born, there's a large fanfare and fireworks and cheerleaders and people bringing out little truffles and things.
You'd like to think so.
Yeah, you might have a man with a glove smacking you and just saying, hi, ooh, this man is going to be immortal. Angels coming down from the heavens and proclaiming that this immortal being has just been born. But actually, you just have to sort of figure it out for yourself.
Wow.
Yeah, you sort of, I mean, you don't really know until you realise that all your mates have got old and you haven't.
Yeah.
So I think I was about 25.
So how long have you been going so far?
Well, I was actually born in the 11th century.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
At a particular point in the 11th century? Or?
Yeah, I was actually born in the 11th century. Well, I can't actually remember the year of my birth because it was so dark into the past. I've had some interesting encounters. But basically, nowadays, I just kind of wander around being depressed. Basically, it's very hard to keep going.
St. John's wort. I hear it's very helpful.
I haven't, actually. What's that?
It's a sort of tea you get. Various.
Really?
Homeopathic antidepressants.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't tried that. I mean, basically what I've been trying to do is...
If you come along enough, eventually these new inventions come along and make your life a little easier.
Is that like that box thing that sits in the middle of your room and you sit in there and watch it and you watch people eating crisps?
Oh, those are pretty much done for. Televisions.
Yeah, that's the one.
Been and gone, practically.
Are they?
Yeah, no, you've got to keep up. Got to keep up. But that's Cyrus Saxon.
That was more old than that.
Cyrus Saxon is great, and he's at our party along with many others. So see you on the 9th. Thanks a lot.
Great, okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
And another track.
It's the rock in the building. Khalid. Live from the United States, Brooklyn, New York, it's your boy.
flopped overseas with Kajabi MC and the Rock. I came to see the mommies in a spot. On the count of three, drop your body like it's hot. One, young, two, you. One, two, three, young hoes, snake charmer. Move your body like a snake, mama. Make me wanna put the snake on ya. I'm on my eighth summer. Still hot, young's the eighth wonder. All I do is get bread, yeah, I take wonder. I take one of your chicks straight from under your armpit. The black Brad Pitt, I'm at till 6 in the a.m. All day I'm P-I-M-P. I am simply attached to the track like Simply. It's simply good. Young ho, infinitely hood. Boy ho from the U.S., you just lay down slow. Catch a boy mingling, ingling, meddling in the Netherlands. Checking in daily under aliases. We rebellious, we back home. Screaming leave Iraq alone. With all my soldiers in the field, I will risk you safe return. But only love kills war, when will they learn? This international ho, been having a flow. Before Bin Laden got Manhattan to blow. Before Ronald Reagan got Manhattan to blow. Before I was cabinet there back and forth. Bro, we had it all day, poppy in the hallway. Cop one on to Simon to give you more yay. Yeah, but that's another story. But for now, I'm gonna turn it around and let the boy play.
Some more news. This first story is about Aceh, Indonesia. The Indonesian assault on the province of Aceh is not a matter of policing a troublesome region through a legal introduction of martial law, but is the prelude to a full-scale military attack. Aceh, situated on the northwestern tip of Sumatra, has seen nearly three decades of conflict between the armed forces of Indonesia and the Free Aceh movement. Around 15,000 people have died as a result. The declaration of martial law by Indonesia and its subsequent military operations have destroyed the peace process mediated by Geneva-based Dunant Center and made any swift resolutions of these issues unlikely. Human rights groups expect large-scale, widespread human rights violations and loss of life to follow. Troops will be positioned around international concerns in the region, such as ExxonMobil, a company whose name is frequently linked with talk of human rights violation. This escalation of a tense situation into war means that Indonesia will forfeit millions of dollars in development aid promised at the end of 2002 in an international donors conference. Campaign Against the Arms Trade has drawn attention to the fact that the Indonesian army is using up-to-date, high-tech military equipment that also happens to be, you guessed it folks, British-made. Meanwhile, in Jakarta, Human Rights Watch reports that Indonesian police failed to stop two organized attacks on Contras, the Commission for the Disappeared and Victims of Violence that has long been critical of the Indonesian government and is investigating developments in Aceh. Police officers stood by as on May the 26th, approximately 20 members of Pemuda Pankamarga arrived at the Contras office and accused staff of pro-separatist leanings before physically assaulting Usman Hamid, a senior Contras member. The next day, just after noon, many more members of PPM returned to the very same office and initiated an orgy of violence, attacking three more Contras workers and destroying part of the office. The police proved reluctant to attend the scene until hours after the militant group had departed. To reduce the risk of further violations, Human Rights Watch urged the Indonesian government to allow independent monitors, diplomats and foreign journalists immediate access to ACHI. All are currently barred from entry. Since hostilities intensified in the last 2 weeks, NGO and human rights workers have seen increased levels of abuse, from arrests to disappearances to summary executions. Brad Adams of Human Rights Watch Asia said, "In the past week, there has already been an increase in fighting and serious internal displacement of the civilian population. With the international monitors gone, there is a real risk soldiers will think they can get away with murder." And then there are the other casualties of war. After the dollars and corpses are counted, there remains the environmental impact. ACHI is home to the Sela, or Conservation of Elephant Landscapes in ACHI scheme, run by Fauna and Flora International in association with other environmental groups. The forests in northern Sumatra in the ACHI region contain such biodiversity that they are of global significance. There, the elephant has become a flagship species in work to protect this environment. Elephant numbers there, though still viable, are declining due to the human conflict and natural resources exploitation in the region. The presence in ACHI of up to 50,000 heavily armed Indonesian troops does not bode well for the future of this environmental project or for the future of this delicate habitat. So what can we do? Campaign Against the Arms Trade is calling people to urge their MPs to sign EDM 1161 and to write to Jack Straw MP at the FCO or fax him expressing your concern at the military operations, protesting about the use of British-made Hawk jets and Scorpion tanks in breach of Indonesian government assurances and demanding the immediate withdrawal of the equipment. Further details available from CAT at www.caat.org.uk. Go on, write to him. He waits. And then a short report now on Iraq and debt. Yeah. Oxfam briefing paper number 48 has echoed calls from Jubilee Iraq to drop the debt accrued by the Saddam regime, which, quote, threatens to undermine reconstruction efforts, close quote. The Oxfam briefing paper argues that the country's debt is unpayable, but also that there are wider moral and legal grounds for reducing Iraq's debt burden. It sets out a case for treating Iraq's debt as odious and illegitimate, and it explains why ordinary Iraqis should not pay for a debt accumulated by a tyrannical regime, borrowing from irresponsible creditors. The briefing paper can be found on the Oxfam website at www.oxfam.org.uk. And for a serious in-depth analysis of these issues, a comprehensive archive of Iraq debt-related materials and suggestions of what you can do to get involved in the campaign, go to the Jubilee Iraq website at www.jubileeiraq.org. There's a petition to sign, suggestions on loving your MP and who to write to, opportunities to help the campaign locally, nationally and internationally, and to really put this issue on the map. So that's Jubilee Iraq at www.jubileeiraq.org.
And another story concerning Iraq. Excuse me. Italian caravan assaulted by American military in Iraq. On Friday the 30th of May, a caravan organised by the Italian Yabasta left Italy for a week-long journey through Iraq and Palestine to support humanitarian projects developed by NGOs in cooperation with local grassroots networks in the two countries. The action was timed with the G8 summit in Evian. On Saturday the 31st of May, the 42-people strong convoy that also included local councillors reached the Iraqi border en route to Baghdad, where they were stopped at an American military checkpoint. The Marines told the activists that they needed to apply to the American command in Baghdad for entry visas to Iraq. The caravan drove back to Oman, and the activists occupied the Italian embassy until the evening, when they managed to obtain necessary visas from both the Italian embassies in Oman and Baghdad and the American authorities in Baghdad. However, upon reaching the same American checkpoint Monday morning, the activists were told that although their visas were valid, they could not enter the country because the American command in Baghdad failed to send the clearance certificates to the Marines at the checkpoint. The caravan refused to drive back to Oman, and the activist organized a sit-down, but were charged by the Marines, who kicked them and hit the protesters with their rifle butts, injuring 6 people. The activists were violently pushed into the cars and escorted outside the checkpoint area by a tank. The disobedience reported that the border area between Jordan and Iraq is hosting 2,500 refugees in a UNHRC camp where people are kept in appalling conditions. Apparently most of these are Palestinian. On a press conference held yesterday in Amman, Luca Casarini, a spokesperson for the Italian Disobbedienti, accused the Italian government of having supplied the American military with information on the activists. We await more news, but you can check this on Ubasta's website. I haven't got the URL, but it's all in Italian anyway. There's some reports on the Indie Media UK website at www.uk.indiemedia.org. And another one about Iraq?
Another one about Iraq? Absolutely possible. Basra, this time from Human Rights Report. Human Rights Watch report, indeed. They've reported that 8 weeks after they entered Basra, British troops have failed to address basic security needs there. They have, the NGO stated, failed to fulfil their international legal obligations as the occupying power. US and UK forces attribute this to a lack of personnel, but Human Rights Watch say in their recent report that the real reason is that security was never a priority. While the security situation in Basra is reportedly still better than Baghdad and elsewhere, the civilian population continues to fear for their lives and their property. There are as many as 5 gunshot homicides daily, in addition to carjacking and organized looting. In April, journalists reported that British troops placidly observing looters pillaging private and public property. The situation has hardly altered 2 months on. Combat troops are required to police streets, they lack all relevant training, and there has been no meaningful dialogue with international or local organisations whose resources and expertise might be more suited to this task. Saman Siatsarifi, a senior Human Rights Watch researcher, said, "There is something terribly wrong when Iraqis are now calling for their former corrupt and brutal police to provide some semblance of security." For further details of this and updates on the situation there, look at www.hrw.org.
Okay, shall we do some more, or shall we go for a track?
We can have a track.
Okay, go for it. We'll be right back.
Media Radio, Radio London.
Okay, and now I've been told to speak very slowly for you all, so I will endeavour to do that just for you, my little darlings. So now there's some news from the Caucasus, where human rights groups and environmental groups are increasingly critical of the Baku-Tbilisi-Cheyenne pipeline. International human rights and environmental groups criticise the proposed oil pipeline that will run from the Azerbaijani port city of Baku to the Turkish port of Cheyenne. The $3 billion, 1,800-kilometre Baku-Tbilisi-Cheyenne pipeline is due to be completed in 2005. So far, only the port at Baku has been built, while major construction work is due to start in just over 2 months' time after a 120-day proposal consideration period. Amnesty International has noted that legal agreements governing the construction and operation of the pipeline may hinder countries, for instance Turkey, from protecting the rights of workers. These legal agreements come under the heading of host government agreements and subordinate national law to the necessities of the pipeline construction consortium. Governments would have to pay the pipeline company compensation for any delays incurred in the construction, including delays resulting from human rights or health and safety provisions. The governments of Turkey, Azerbaijan, and Georgia have already signed a declaration stating that the construction and operation of the pipeline will comply with international environmental and human rights standards. Leading ecologists, biologists, and relevant specialists in all three countries oppose the planned route, which would destroy virgin forest and cause incalculable environmental damage to some regions whose biodiversity has not even been adequately mapped. BP, however, insists that the land above the pipeline will be returned to its original state after construction is complete. With acres of ancient forest involved, this would seem at best improbable and at worst misleading. CEE Bankwatch Network, a coalition of environmental organisations from Central and Eastern Europe, and Georgia's Green Alternative, have deemed the consortium's environmental assessment inadequate. As Manana Kokhladze said, there was no discussion about an alternative routing of the pipeline. In Turkey, Kokhladze said, the route crosses several internationally important wetlands, two sites protected under Turkish legislation, and 49 ecologically sensitive areas. In Georgia, environmental activists and scientists are concerned that the pipeline's route goes through the Borjomi Valley, where mineral water is produced and exported. Kokhladze said an oil leakage could have a dramatic impact, an effect on the local economy, for whom this is the main export. In Azerbaijan, members of an anti-pipeline organisation have expressed concern over the blatant government propaganda for the project and increasingly repressive action taken against individuals and groups who oppose it. For instance, after speaking at a conference on the pipeline in London, their offices in Azerbaijan were searched by the Azerbaijani Ministry of Internal Affairs, and their co-workers were quizzed by armed police. Activists say they are also concerned that many of the decisions governing the pipeline have been made without proper consultation with local populations. Anders Lustgarten of the London-based Kurdish Human Rights Project has said some areas, such as the Kurdish parts of Turkey, where the BP-led consortium did not properly inform local populations of what it intended to do, and the local populations along the route of the pipeline will not share fairly in the project's revenues. He also said that the project will create very few local jobs, as workers are being imported from outside, something you're already seeing in the construction of the port in Baku. For more information on this, look at www.baku.org or www.risingtide.org.uk.
And some news from Israel-Palestine. The international solidarity movement have demanded an apology and immediate retraction from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs Israel for statements on its website accusing ISM of participating in violent and illegal actions against IOF soldiers and of having links with Palestinian terrorist organizations. ISM workers who have in recent months increasingly become the targets for Israeli military operations deny all links with terrorist organizations and see this as part of the campaign against them. The language used by the Israeli military is particularly offensive as they themselves are engaged in illegal and violent activities in the occupied territories, and although their military act and through their military act as state terrorists. ISM reports from Nablus. Several houses in the Askar refugee camp were occupied by IOF forces in the small hours of Tuesday morning. They used force and threats of force to gain entry to the houses, one of which contains 28 family members and then 20 soldiers. In some cases, the soldiers brought their own food and water and seemed to be planning a long stay. Unlike the brutal action of Israeli forces in Tul Kahan refugee camp last week, during which period soldiers pillaged homes, stopped ambulances on the way to emergency calls, occupied houses and killed or wounded civilians, some children, there have been no reports of physical abuse in this instance. However, ISM reports that the house occupation is one of many illegal tactics used by Israeli soldiers to psychologically damage the Palestinian people. The trauma and embarrassment of occupation has long-reaching effects. ISM International Day of Action for Justice in Palestine, I think that's tomorrow, June the 5th. Is tomorrow June the 5th?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huwara Checkpoint, Nablus, so we won't be there. On June the 5th, 2003, the 36th anniversary of the Israeli occupation of the West Bank and Gaza, the community of Nablus, joined by members of the International Solidarity Movement, will demonstrate at Huwara Checkpoint to protest the continuous violence perpetrated by the Israeli occupation forces against Palestinian communities and international human rights workers in occupied Palestine. This non-violent civil demonstration will be primarily comprised of members of the medical, educational, legal, journalist, civil and human rights organizations of Nablus. Significant support will also be provided by community members who have been severely injured as a direct result of IOF violence against a civilian population. This march will emphasize the repeated demands for an end to the Israeli occupation of Palestine, as defined by UNSC Resolution 242, an end to the arrest, torture and killing of the Palestine population, an end to the arrest, deportation and killing of journalists and human rights observers, an end to the confiscation of Palestinian land and water resources and the destruction of homes, and finally, an end to the construction of the apartheid wall.
And now a story from Burma on Aung San Suu Kyi. Human Rights Watch is not alone in calling for Aung San Suu Kyi and other NLD officials to be released. She was detained along with 17 other NLD officials after a savage attack on National League for Democracy vehicles that left several dead and dozens injured. There are reports that Dor Aung San Suu Kyi received head injuries. They were attacked by members of the Union Solidarity Development Association, USDA, a government-created organization that has increasingly taken on a paramilitary character. According to military officials, 4 people were killed and 50 injured in the attack. Aung San Suu Kyi has officially been placed in protective custody, but her whereabouts remain unknown and concerns are growing about her condition. Aung San Suu Kyi had spent the last month touring northern and central Burma, attracting large crowds of supporters and, according to press reports, growing harassment from armed USDA members. Following the incident, the government shut the country's universities as well as several offices of the NLD. The universities are periodically closed by Burmese government when they fear mass protests, particularly linked to fate of Aung San Suu Kyi. One such period of closed universities lasted 3.5 years. Human Rights Watch have accused the Burmese government of provoking violence to justify a crackdown on opposition groups. Other groups are calling for selective sanctions on Burma to be introduced and suggest focusing of attention on Western firms such as British American Tobacco, which have joint ventures with the Burmese government.
Okay, I think we're going to go to a track now, and then we're going to do up a roundup of the G8 protests in Evian in Switzerland and France, and hopefully have an interview with some people who are still there.
I have found a breaking down. Destruction.
You're listening to Indie Media Radio London. Don't hate the media, be the media.
Hello and welcome back. We're going to go to the roundup of the weekend's events at Evian, Lausanne, Geneva and En Masse, which was all demonstrations against the G8. Which happened in Evian. Since we gave you the pre-event roundup last week, a crazy week has passed. It's hard to sum up what really happened. We were getting so many reports about cheerful but determined protests in Geneva, Lausanne, En Masse. Reports about crowds of dancing boys and girls, rhythm, colour, sunshine, a slogan from Indie Media Barcelona sums up this part of the protest. The only good system is a sound system. At the same time, the reports became increasingly disturbing. German riot police went in to support the Swiss police in their ruthless but not necessarily effective efforts to show who controls the area around Lake Leman. Indie Media Switzerland published instructions that the Swiss army received with an order to shoot. Police used tear gas, water cannons, rubber bullets, and they targeted concussion grenades at demonstrators. An episode from the No Border demo on Friday sums up the ambience of the Evian protests. Quote from IMC UK Timeline, 11:40, the demo is mainly peaceful and festive, although some cans and stones have been thrown into different buildings, including the Russian embassy. 12, the demo has arrived at the headquarters of the International Organization of Migration, IMO. Reports are coming in of police using tear gas. 12:25, the situation outside the IOM building has calmed down and the demo is marching on. People return tear gas with confetti. We also receive reports from the four protest camps called villages. We heard about long debates about the best strategies well into the early hours, about collaborative decision making and practical support. The biggest village at Bourdonnet near Lausanne was legal, but on Sunday afternoon, police surrounded the camp, attempted to check everybody's identity, and detained a number of people. and Tuesday morning, La Bourdonnette was evicted. The reports gave a general sense of mutual respect for different tactics, from peaceful fluffy marches to loud and cheerful barricades to targeted property destruction. From the timelines of IMC UK for Wednesday and Thursday. On Wednesday and Thursday last week, local protesters and police were setting the framework for the next few days. On Wednesday, May the 28th, the Geneva shops already boarded up their windows. Activists gathered in Lausanne for the first cheerful pink and silver demo. On Thursday, May the 29th, hundreds of people are streaming into the four protest camps near Lausanne and Annemasse. Lausanne is Switzerland, Annemasse is France. The Schengen Agreement had been temporarily lifted to control the borders while activists are on their way to the anti-GA protests. In Annemasse, more than 1,000 people, led by Pink and Silver, observed a minute of silence in memory of Carlo Giuliani, the activist murdered by the Italian police during the anti-GA protests in Genoa 2001. Many local people were welcoming the protesters. Thousands took to the streets in Lausanne and Geneva for colourful protests. A brief standoff with police in Lausanne was soon diffused and protests ended peacefully. The Geneva demo was accompanied by a large press contingent. Some stones, followed by tear gas, didn't change the positive mood. On Friday, May the 30th, for free movement and free communication, no border, was the motto of Friday. 4,000 determined protesters visited the offices of the International Organization of Migration and the WTO and the World Intellectual Property Organization, WIPO, W-I-P-O, during midday. A bike caravan blocked the Nestlé headquarters for a while and joined 400 critical mass cyclists in the early evening. An occupied train crossed the border between Annemasse and Geneva. Many passengers were without passports. These actions might illustrate what activists mean when they demand free movement and no borders. One aspect of the right to free communication is, of course, the right to free independent reporting. In the early hours yesterday, activists closed the IMC at the Social Centre Lausanne in Geneva due to police aggression. We'll have in a while a report about that from Geneva. They also closed the main dispatch communication chat room for security reasons. Quote from Geneva Dispatch: cops were circling Lausanne with truck full of rockets, in brackets, some kind of weapon, and it looked like they were getting ready to be evil to us, unquote. Despite increasing police pressure significantly on Lausanne, indie media volunteers were providing grassroots coverage throughout the protests. Czech IMC Switzerland and the French IMCs, as well as the multilingual G8 IMC site, which is www.indiemedia.org/G8. Until yesterday, a video stream and two radio streams were netcasting the whole 4 or 5 days. Check the links, the streams might still be going, I'm not sure right now. All the organisations targeted in the No Border demo were institutions of global governments. The mood was loud and full of rhythm and festive. People carried many banners, including a big one that read Open Source. The headquarters of the World Trade Organization is housed in the International Trade Center. Here, No Border activists spoke about open source, against repression of information and freedom of movement. But the anger of the protest went beyond speeches. Protesters opened the gates to the WTO compound and threw bangers into the courtyard. They tore down the 144 nation organization sign at the front gate and daubed walls with the slogan, "Smash the WTO." Later on, the building has the window smashed just after some people attacked the premises of an Audi and Shell garages. The demo ended after 2 hours at the central station. Three arrests were made.
Saturday, fires on the lake. When someone overly panics, locals in Lake Leman area calm him down by saying that the lake will not be on fire, meaning that nothing can be so dramatic that it would set the lake on fire. On the evening of Saturday the 31st, protesters symbolically set fire to the lake, also literally by lighting a burning craft on the lake, but also setting 50 fires all around the shores of Lake Leman. This action showed that nothing is impossible in the current political situation, that in fact the lake is on fire, with the privatisation of water resources and public space, increasing control of borders and people, as well as communication channels, and with the new type of warfare that we've seen developing in the recent Iraq war. And now from Saturday's timeline. Until early hours of Saturday morning, more than 5,000 inhabitants in the activist villages were debating the best strategies to block the GM summit on Sunday's day of action. In the morning, a protest at the Socialist Party conference in En Masse was tear-gassed. Some G8 delegates were trapped in the building. In Geneva later, a petrol station is on fire. We can hear the explosion in Indie Media Radio's stream. Then police released tear gas. Reports of burning cars, two water cannons and 250 cops have surrounded the Usine squat, where a lot of international activists are staying, then left. Seems there are no arrests, but there is minor street fight. There are police checkpoints all over the city, arresting anyone who looks funny. And then in the early hours of the morning, the action continues in Geneva. Streets are closed and some cars appear burning. A large number of police and military vans at a bridge, civil police walking and riding motorcycles. And then a little bit later in the morning, a team of 30 to 40 riot police with one water cannon are situated at the lower streets. The situation seems calmer now. From the radio stream, we hear that the police are still everywhere around the Usine Social Centre. People are going to sleep, preparing to get up early tomorrow.
And that was Friday, or up until Saturday's timeline. We don't have Sunday's timeline here, but full timelines are on the UK Indie Media website. Two British men are currently in hospital. Martin Shaw, an activist who comes from London but lives in Barcelona, is in hospital with multiple serious injuries, including his legs and back, after police cut the rope that he and another activist was hanging off a bridge during a blockade. I think they were trying to put up a banner on the bridge. The police cut the rope and he fell about 20 metres. Another British man, Guy Smallman, who is an Indie Media UK volunteer, but he's also an agency photographer, deputy head of the freelance NUJ. He needed a two-hour-long operation after police fired a stun grenade at his leg in what's been called an attack on him. They were targeting him because he was taking photographs. This was after a very, very peaceful, the biggest demo of all over the weekend, which 100,000 people went to, which was organised by unions and other such groups. It was after the demo had finished and everybody was returning home when the police opened up, targeting all sorts of people, women, children, old people. And apparently in the mainstream media in Geneva have been calling for police chief resignations and the like. I think we should go to Penny and Dave. Are you guys there?
Yeah, we're here. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Well, we're in Evian. We're just, not Evian, sorry. We're in Geneva, just coming to say hi. We're in the dispatch room bringing you this report. Dave's going to give you an update on Guy, which is quite cool. And then we'll come back to me and I'll talk about Lausanne. Okay, see you later. Over to Dave.
Go for it, Dave.
Hi, Guy Smallman, one of the Indie UK volunteers. Some of you may have heard about this. He was deliberately shot by police in the leg with a concussion grenade, which is a grenade that explodes with a very loud flash and a loud bang. It tore off part of the lower part of his leg. He's had several operations in hospital, but he's stable and with a few more operations to go and maybe most of a year of physiotherapy, he'll be able to walk okay again. So that's good news.
Oh, that's really good news, yeah.
Yeah, it was thought that it was a lot more serious.
Well, at first they thought he'd lose his leg.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
And then that actually happened yesterday as well. They shot another journalist in the leg, but not as seriously as Guy. So there's been obvious targeting of journalists by various different parts of the police. And this was actually the police from Zurich, we believe. couple of other bits of news. People who are travelling by train to Berlin from Geneva here, the first place they stopped at when they got to Berlin was the Swiss Embassy, and they were actually, they held a demonstration, they were actually able to speak to the ambassador, who actually apologised for the behaviour of the police, the German police, that were on duty in Switzerland. So that's interesting. That's
wow, that's pretty good. One thing I didn't mention was in Barcelona, the French consulate was occupied yesterday morning as protest against the French police's actions in Lausanne.
Sure. I'm going to pass you over so you can hear a little bit. Is this what you want to hear, a little bit about some of the blockades on Sunday?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, well, I'll pass you over to hear about Lausanne, and then I'll tell you a little bit about some of the other stuff.
Okay.
I guess we have to be quite quick, really.
Yeah.
Hello. Lausanne was pretty cool, actually. Everybody left about 5 o'clock in the morning and set out from the Lausanne camp, and there was the pink block at the front, and they all marched off, lots of singing and dancing. Way, way behind was a block of demonstrators called the Charcoal Block, who were building blockades to stop the delegates from reaching their kind of destination, the WTO.
Did they manage to stop anybody?
The G8. Yes, they did. They managed to stop... Sorry, I'm a bit tired. I haven't had much sleep. The G8, duh. They managed to stop the American delegation for about 2 hours, which was brilliant. One of the things that they did, which you might not know, was they took everything out of a building site, all of the equipment, and dumped it all on a roundabout. And then they came out with chainsaws and cut down 2 trees. They felled 2 trees, which went across the roundabout, which was what held the delegates up there. As people moved through Lausanne, protesting, trying to reach the actual port to blockade, the pinks went on ahead, the charcoal grey block built blockades. We were attacked with tear gas and percussion grenades, and then gradually herded back through the town of Lausanne, and people were herded back into the camp. We were waiting behind, and we saw that they chased lots of people out of the bushes, the police, in a kind of pincer motion, and forced them into the legal camp, which was being used by some protesters in Lausanne. And they forced them to sit in the sun for 4 hours because they said that if people didn't have their papers on them, they would be arrested. So the people began a solidarity action. They said, we would all leave together. So they began to drag people out brutally to take them to the station to force them to hand over their ID. We saw people being kneeled on. The police were using force. They were kneeling on the heads of protesters as they dragged them away. And occasionally, if they said, what are you doing, they'd show a CS gas can to their face, threatening to spray them straight in the face.
God, that sounds pretty hardcore.
Pretty horrible.
Yeah. I did hear one report of one of the demos,
4 hours.
Shopkeepers giving out free bottles of Evian water to the protesters. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. When on the Lausanne demo people arrived into the centre, a cafe owner just came out with about 5 boxes of Evian and
brilliant.
Put it all down. It was so sound. It was really, really cool. The Swiss people here have been really actually amazing because on the last nights in Geneva, what we've noticed is there's been small groups of protesters having peaceful kind of sit-down protests, and they're just sitting down, and then they've been surrounded by riot cops and water cannons, and of course the Swiss are seeing this as a spectacle, so they're gathering to watch, and they're gathering and waiting, and then the German police have turned on the people of Switzerland, and they've started shooting rubber bullets at them and tear gas, and the people just aren't having it. They're running away and just being shot at, basically.
Wow.
Anyway, you must be running out of time now.
We've got about a minute and a half, I think.
You've got a minute and a half.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we're going to disappear now.
Okay.
But we'll see you next week with lots of audio.
Brilliant.
Oh, wait a second. Dave wants to say something. Sorry.
Yeah, just to round up, on Sunday, of course, there was the huge 100,000, up to 100,000 demonstration, but blockades occurred in many places right across the town. And it was really the combination of blockades, both in Geneva, in Lausanne, in Annemasse, and in other places that resulted in the two-hour delay. There's quite a positive vibe from people in Geneva and the surrounding area, despite the repression that's followed. That was almost to be expected, considering that the demonstrations did succeed
Brilliant.
In delaying. delaying the start of the G8.
Great. Okay, thanks, Dave.
Ciao.
And thanks, Penny, and we'll see you in here next week, I guess.